All right, everybody, welcome, welcome. It is time for another Toolbox Tuesday.
Yeah, we're kind of going to continue a little bit from last week on a lot of the exam and treatment presentation elements. So it's a good one.
So if you have not been with us before, every Tuesday in our practices is called Toolbox Tuesday, and the theme of our huddles is taking one of the resources from the hundreds available that we have in our asset arsenal to make sure that everyone is on the same page and do a little bit of a deep dive into these tools. So this week is going to be part two in our series on elements for production success.
Yeah, so let's kind of get into it, because a lot of this is a lot of the topics that we go through, obviously with our team, but with our doctors too as well. And I think this is kind of how we have frameworks about breaking up treatment, how we have frameworks about presenting treatment, how we have frameworks about the kind of passing the baton, as we call it, which we'll get into a little bit, and basically the communication between the doctor, the DA, and whoever's presenting the treatment. So it's a really it's a thick topic, but we it's something we talk about.
Multi-layered.
It's something we talk about literally every day in our practice, and I know everyone does too. But it's something that we've really strived, because it's something that I think a lot of offices, and myself included, really thought this was more of a skill or an experience thing that you just had to kind of figure out for yourself sometimes, without having a set framework or a set recipe for doing this. And so we're kind of trying to bring steps and a recipe to something that is a little bit more free form in the past.
Okay. And our last series, we talked about exam flow and all of the elements of an exam. That's what we went over. This is the purpose behind the protocol for our exam flow. So if you did not go through that series with us, you can go back there. This is where it starts. And then this is the action item that follows up after that. I think so many offices that we're hearing from our private clients and just colleagues countrywide are feeling the pains from production being down in 2024, with all the things going on, economy, politically. It's been a tough year across the board. And on the one hand, we can't control everything, but we constantly are talking with our team about controlling the controllable. So that's where this elements of production success was born from, to provide to our doctors, hey, you can't control everything. You can't control if someone gets COVID and they have to cancel their appointment, but what are the things within your control? So we're going to break that down and go step by step as far as what these individual categories mean. So our doctors all have doctor scorecards, which we also have done several Toolbox Tuesday episodes on. Again, you can go back to look at those episodes on how we have built out those metrics for our on-target tracking. This is a additional tab that we have on our doctor scorecard tab for our doctors to look at. And we are not looking for them to come back to us with a grade sheet of, I did this, that's this, that, the other thing. This is not a pass fail situation. These are softer, in air quotes, metrics to take a look at that the doctors can ask themselves some of these questions and see the results that can be generated from those. So first and foremost are the proficient exams. We start with that with our exam flow. We have our cheat sheets. We have our scripting. We have our 31-point AI analysis that goes around this and how this generates production. If you are doing a proficient exam, and Roberto is our AI agent, as we've talked about before, Roberto is giving you all great scores. Next step from there is asking the team for feedback on your exams. And we are talking about asking your team for true, honest feedback on your exams that you can actually translate into action items. Not, doctor, you're doing good. Everything is good. Good is a feeling. Good does not generate production results. And do your team members hear things that you do not? We always say your team knows way more than you do about what your patients are actually thinking, because as soon as you walk out of the room, that patient is going to turn to your assistant and go, tell me what the real story is here now, or your front office when they go in to do the treatment presentation. So, what feedback can you glean from your team about how those exams really are going?
Yeah, and that's is a big one too. And this one isn't a one-off situation
No.
too. Asking your team for feedback is something that is there's multiple factors here, but if there's not a framework, if there's not a system, they're gonna just judge it on based on however they feel they should, right? There's no baseline for them to do that. So it's really important that not only the doctor understands the framework, the doctor understands the recipe that we're following, the protocol, but that the team understands it really well too. It's repeatable too, and it is repeated too. So that's really important, because asking your team member for feedback is an open-ended question, but if they have a million different things to consider and they don't really know a lot of the context for what you're asking and why you're asking it or what steps you're asking about, you're not going to get a very worthwhile or really good answer. So the other part about this is something that we talked to our doctors about a lot. This is probably a different topic for another time, but we've talked about this a few times in past episodes, but is if you're not open to the feedback consistently in front of your team, you're not going to get honest feedback. And that goes for anyone. That goes for any part of your life, if for that matter too. I know a lot of people kind of feel that, but if we're constantly justifying or being defensive or having a rebuttal or waiting for, you know, kind of not arguing, but that we do see that too, unfortunately. But if we're trying to tell the team member why we did something or how they think or why we think we were right in doing whatever they're trying to give us a little constructive criticism, feedback about, they're not going to do it consistently and they're not going to do it honestly. It's a huge part because we really want to have that honest feedback going both ways. Because like Jennifer said, they are the best person and they're the only person in the room that has any idea what you should be doing. And so right. There's really no other way to get that honest feedback. Yes, we have Roberto. Yes, we have all our AI judging, but the person sitting there is reading the patient's face, is reading your face, is kind of reading the whole room. And that is by far the best feedback and the quickest feedback that you can get.
Yeah, this conversation about feedback just came up with our leadership team yesterday. I had our weekly team meeting with them. And, you know, doctors, you guys are intimidating, right? And there is also a respect level there that we want to maintain. And, you know, team members are not stupid. They know where their paychecks are coming from, you know, so they're not trying to have a battle with you. But, you know, part of the defensiveness that we're trying to break down with our leadership team as well, not just our doctors, is we care about what we're doing, right? Everyone is trying to do their best. Everyone's trying to do a good job. No one is trying to mess up an exam. No one's trying to offend a patient. No one's trying to not schedule that appointment. So the defense mechanism comes up because automatically you're like, but that's not what I meant. That's not what I tried to do. Right. I was trying to do X, Y, Z, you know, so it's coming from a place of caring. But what I've coached our leadership team on is you have to accept that feedback. Accepting it does, number one, doesn't make it true, right? You accept it, you hear it, and you process it. You thank that person for having the courage to give you that feedback. And then you have silence of the lambs and you process it in whatever way you need to. That is a different scenario than if you have a conflict with someone and you said something maybe that you didn't mean or it came off the wrong way. If you need to apologize for something, go apologize for something. If someone is trying to give you objective feedback, you process it, accept it, and then you do with it what you will. You're not on trial here.
You're not on trial. And I think that this is, we're kind of going down a little bit of a different path, but I think it's really, really important about this accepting feedback, because the better you get at this, the more feedback you're going to get, the better feedback you're going to get, and the faster you're going to progress. You know, you're only going to progress as fast as you get feedback. And immediate feedback is something so hard to get in dentistry, because a lot of our failures clinically, we don't see for months or not, if not years, right? Or weeks sometimes, you know, even. So we don't remember those things in real time sometimes. So getting immediate feedback anywhere we can is so critical to our progress. And I'll follow up one more thing about what Jennifer said about how to kind of accept that feedback. We talk a lot about active listening with our exams too, and making sure the patient and or the doctor is kind of cluing into the patient, what they're saying and nodding. And there's a whole different strategy on active listening, but this goes along with the getting feedback too from your team. And instead of saying, well, I meant to do this, like Jennifer said, well, I meant to do that, and kind of giving, you know, putting up your defenses, ask more questions, act like you're inquisitive, like, hey, not just saying, hey, thanks for your feedback and walk away. That's not enough. It's just, hey, what do you think I should do here? Or well, really, can you expand on that a little bit more? I really want to hear more about what you have to say or your input. Really value it. Really act like you're valuing that feedback. And it goes a long way. One, you're going to get a lot more out of it personally. Two, you're going to get a lot more of it in the future. And that's really, really critical.
And then following up with using the tools that you have available, we talk about our exam transcription and our exam flow. Now, this is not something that Sten and I just decided this is the way an exam should go. This has been built over years of having feedback from our doctors, from having feedback from our leadership team and our partners of that, hey, this is a recipe that we have seen as the most successful. Is everyone agreeing? This is our recipe. These are the cookies we're baking. Yes, we're all in agreement. Okay, great. Those are the metrics we're using. Time and time again, we go through the effort of recording our exams. We go through the effort of having Roberto analyze them. And we hear from doctors that exam went well, and they actually didn't review the transcripts on areas that they can improve. So are you actually using the tools that are available? Now, no one wants to see themselves on video. No one wants to listen to themselves. All of those things can be painful. But if you have a resource available to you and you really are committed to doing better than yesterday, it's one of our core values, are you utilizing those resources?
Yeah. So let's get into kind of some of those, more of those resources that we have a little bit right now too.
All right. So case acceptance, that's the next category here. We measure case acceptance based off of scheduling. I know there's all different philosophies of how you measure case acceptance. We talk about scheduling. Now, something that has, especially in the last year for us, we've seen a bigger change in is people moving around once they schedule appointments. So one of the metrics we look at is cases that schedule, did they actually follow through with treatment? Right. If your case scheduled while they were in office and then they texted us to cancel in the parking lot, that was not an accepted case. They didn't have any intention of going through with that case. That just meant that they didn't want to say no to scheduling while they were in office and they weren't committed to it the entire time. Everyone has those things that happen, but you know, this is one of the benefits that we have of having a group where we can see what the trends are practice-wide. So if we have a doctor that this is happening more to than other doctors, we can really pull that apart and like, hey, is there something that's happening there as far as closing that case that's impacting your production?
Yeah. And I think this is, you know, the case acceptance thing, I think it's not a big difference, but there's a lot of pass fail, meaning if you, people will basically calculate it on like a pass fail. Like, so if you present $10,000, but you only schedule $5,000, that still counts as one. We don't do that. It's literally on the dollar amount, and the dollar amount scheduled, the dollar amount presented. And yes, that translates a lot of times into a lower scheduling percentage than a lot of, you know, things you will see in a lot of the metric systems or a lot of the practice management set of seminars you go to. But I think that's a more accurate depiction of what's really going on. And yes, you could argue that you present a multi-phase treatment plan and you're only doing portion of it, so that shouldn't count as, if for example, a 30% acceptance, but we're really looking at acceptance, right? And so what you're going to get in our metric, the way we do it, is you'll get that next 30%, even though you didn't present it on the next week or the next two weeks, whatever that happens. So it all kind of works out in the wash, but we really like that because it's a very clear depiction of what's really getting on the schedule. And it's as simple as that, how we're doing. So we also use that because we do, like I think we've talked about before, we use a lot of sedation, a lot of IV sedation in our practice. We're also trying to get our patients, and our patients love it, to schedule more treatment in one visit. And so that really kind of hones into on that metric that we can judge how much are we, is that a, could we have done both right side, left side? Could we have done full mouth? Could we have done, you know, the fillings all in one appointment instead of the fillings at the seat appointment, you know, things like that. So it gives us a little bit of ammo, a little bit of, you know, talking points with our doctors to kind of really fine tune how they're getting things on the schedule.
And that leads into the second point on this case acceptance section, and is that is our patients starting with some portion of treatment. Now, this is the difference between an explanation and an excuse for someone not going forward with treatment, right? It will always be finances. It always has been finances. People who have money sitting in the bank, $2,000, whatever it is on a crown, they would rather go on vacation with that money, right? It will always be finances. And we're not saying that finances aren't something that we need to take into consideration. Of course, we need to take that into consideration. But the flip side is a patient walked in the door, and most reasonable people, not all of them, but most reasonable people expect that dentistry is going to cost money, right? They made the first step of walking in the door. If they're starting something, they're starting with a quadrant. It may not be the full mouth that you would love to see them do, but they're making progress with it. That's still a win, right? We still have an opportunity to work with that patient, continue to work through their treatment. That's different than a patient that's just saying, you're lying to me, dentists are crooks, I'm never coming back in the door again. Because what we have found is doctors can very easily fall in the trap. This person, this patient can't afford treatment. They're diagnosing the pocketbook before they even try. Or they have a patient who has no idea from a budgetary standpoint, that's fine. A lot of patients don't have any idea from a budgetary standpoint just because they don't walk in the door and don't say, I have unlimited funds. I can spend $100,000 on my treatment, doctor. You just tell me what it is. Doesn't mean we can't work with that patient.
Yeah. And I think that's really, we've all had it. And we've had it so many times. I can't even remember, but how many times we will have a patient walk in the door and for lack of, you know, being PC here, they don't look like they can afford any treatment.
Right.
And then that's the patient that all of a sudden they're starting with a locator case that day. They're starting with
that's full mouth.
They're getting forward with the implant. They're slapping down the credit card. We've had multiple patients slap down envelopes full of cash. And and so the point is you can never judge a book by its cover.
No.
And it's so critical and it's almost impossible to do. And I mean, 100% understand it. But the patient, like Jennifer said, that comes in saying that I have $100,000 for treatment, just tell me what it is, let's get going. A lot of times those don't end up, or that's not really true. So a lot of times too, is what you find out too. And you know, working in a, you know, very high end neighborhood or higher end environment sometimes, which a lot of us do, we have multiple practices in multiple areas with, you know, different kind of clientele with different kind of income levels, but a lot of them are very high in certain areas. They are almost more picky with where they spend their money than the people that just know they need treatment. They're going to find a way to get done, even if they don't have the money sitting in their bank account, right? We've seen that so many times. You know, the person pulling up in the Maserati that is basically telling you, no, I'm not going to do the crown, the single crown. And it happens all the time, right? And so and then you have the patient that rode their bike there that looks like they just rolled off the street, throwing down money for the locator case. And it's, we really need to kind of present things the same way every time and not looking like we're a kid in a candy store when we have someone that we think has a lot of. Because that's also a very bad sign, and the patients can pick up on that very, very quickly. On the same token, we're not treating the patients that don't look like they can afford, or we don't feel like they can afford something. We're not treating them any differently. We're not shying away from presenting them with ideal treatment first, or at least bringing it up and having that conversation, bracketing fees, things like that.
We just had this conversation on our doctor meeting this last week because, you know, the patient that drives up in the Maserati has less discretionary income than the patient who's riding their bike.
A lot of times that's true.
And just because a patient isn't slapping down a credit card for any treatment plan you present to them, again, doesn't mean that we can't work with that patient. And, you know, I said flat out to our doctors, don't you dare give up on that patient. Just because they can't afford it today doesn't mean that it's no forever. And that's what they've heard from every other office that's brought them to us, right? Because they haven't had an office that has worked with them to find a way. So don't you dare give up on that patient.
Right.
Next is valid ERs. And I'm saying ERs in air quotes for everyone who is just listening to this. Everyone has an emergency. And again, we're not saying that emergencies don't come up. There are different kinds of emergencies. We have talked about this before. You've heard me mention this before. Ladies and maybe gentlemen, when you make a hair appointment and they make you have a deposit for that appointment and you're going to have to wait 3 months to get back in with your hairstylist and they're going to charge you and you know it, you're moving heaven and earth to make sure that you are making that hair appointment, right? We have to have a little bit of the same line when it comes to dentistry, right? You know, Sten is also used the analogy that you don't cancel out your open heart surgery at the hospital. Now, we're not doing something life and death. You know, it might not be as serious as that, but a lot of the ERs are asking one more question, right? Flat tires happen. There's also a wonderful service known as Uber that can still get you to your dental appointment, right? Can you just make it a little bit later? Something happened, your kid projectile vomited on the way to school. Okay, let's clean up the vomit and then we can still see you in an hour. Asking one more question. If it's always just an emergency that comes up, those patients are not truly valuing your time and their appointment that they scheduled. And that's something we can look at office-wide. You know, do we have the stickiness, we call it, of the appointment, not just, if you can't make it, just let us know and we'll reschedule. And we have 17 openings this week that you can, no, we also don't have cancellations in our offices. We have availability. We're not presenting that our doctors are just waiting around for whenever you can happen to make it in the office.
Yeah, I think this is a bigger issue too. And this stems from a really big issue that I really feel is a huge problem in dentistry, whereas us as dental providers, and I think this is rampant, we don't really value the work that we provide across the board. And I think that goes from, I don't know if we're comparing ourselves to surgeons or hospitals or or what it is. But in Jennifer's example, if the hairstylist can have an ironclad policy, so can we, right? And I think this gets into a little bit of the treatment planning, and our doctors or our team members really thinking that the money that the patient is going to spend on that treatment is the best place that they could spend the money, period. And that's more of an internal mindset issue that we try to really tackle with our doctors on a weekly basis for sure. But if we're not prioritizing the work that we're providing or our time, there's no way that's translating to the patient. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in the comment, like Jennifer said, where, hey, just let us know if you don't can't make it. It just is in the subconscious way we're just communicating and the little things throughout the exam, right? And downgrading treatment, or hey, saying you can do this one or you can do that one, or really giving someone, hey, you really should get this crown done or should get this root canal done, things like that. It's all in our verbiage too, and we're not really placing a priority on what treatment we're recommending. And I think that it really places this kind of elective mindset in patient's mind about dental treatment. And this is like, okay, I'll get to this when I can. And yes, it's not heart surgery, but we always talk about with our doctors, a crack or a filling or a cavity, whatever, crown is a massive heart surgery style issue for that too. And I think the little bit of this comes from us in a confidence thing in dentistry, and a little bit of it comes from the fact that we just talked about this week with our doctors, from the fact that we're really good at our job and we can fix anything. I mean, literally anything. And so we also have that in our mind. Hey, well, if they get a root canal, or if they don't get a root canal and take that too, that can put an implant. If we don't do an implant, then we can do a partial or a bridge, or we can do an All-on-X, we can do a locator, whatever it is. We have multiple different steps that we can do to treat this patient. And so we don't almost place that priority on tackling something a little bit earlier, placing that urgency on the treatment, because we know, one, that it's not heart surgery, and two, that we can fix it later down the line. And I think that's a real problem, because I think that a lot of these cancellations, or these emergency cancellations that patients have, stem from that mindset, or stem from that communication that we're unintentionally portraying in our exams.
And it's tough right now too, right? I mean, we're talking about production, production, production. And when production numbers are down, there is also the side from the doctors of, I'll take whatever I can get, right? Like, I don't want to turn any patient away. Like, if they can come in on Sunday at 3 o'clock, that's what I'm going to do. I'm exaggerating it a little bit, but I mean, there is some of that sometimes. The patients smell that fear. We've also talked about if you go into an exam and your schedule is wide open for the week, there's a certain desperation that comes with that that is going to work against you 100% of the time. It has to be consistent, just the same as offering the same treatment options to all patients. You have to have consistency in how you're presenting the care that you're offering to your patients.
Yeah, right.
Well, this is to be continued. We're going to be continuing in this series for the next couple of weeks here. We're going to pick up on the case acceptance topic and then move on to efficiencies. In the meantime, if you would like to connect with us and find out about our private client opportunities that we have, you can connect with us on our website, pathwaydentalsolutions.com. Our email is connect@pathwaydentalsolutions.com, or you can reach us on all of the social platforms. We also have our weekly newsletter that is going out with all of these Toolbox Tuesday tips that you can help incorporate into your practices. So we'll be back for part three of this series next week.
All right, you guys, see you next time.
Bye.